Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in Straight Lives Talk Show. And I want to wish all of you a good evening. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And if you do have any comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, please drop me a note at bonk@aol.com and leave me your number so then I'll pick it up. Other than that, we'll be avoiding, phone calls because of harassment purposes. So if you do want to get on or you don't have a question you'd like to email me, that's fine. Before I introduce my very special guest tonight, I just have a couple of announcements to make. I can't believe we're only 3 weekends away from our healing weekend in Houston, Texas. And I am so excited. I'm going to be with my Texas women because they do make me strong. And Texas women are incredibly strong. We have women coming from all over, not just the country, but also from all over the world to join in our healing weekend. And there's still room if you would like to join me and some of the best women you could ever meet for moving along and healing. Just drop me a note at bonk@aol.com. Also, if you have children who are adult children who would like to join our Adult Children's Gay Fathers group, please encourage them to get in touch with me. We have a wonderful group going for adult children and dealing with their problems. So without further ado, because I don't want to lose one extra moment's worth of time, I'd like to introduce my very special guest, Donna Anderson. Donna, thank you so much for rejoining us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Bonnie, for the invitation. I really appreciate it.
I want to tell you, Donna, you have a big fan base with my women. They really adore you for all that you're doing. And so many women have written me notes when I mentioned that you'll be our guest, that telling me, please tell Donna, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, and how much they love you because they read your material, they see your newsletters that, I send them every week. They've learned from the books that they've bought from you and really feel so encouraged in their lives after they hear from you. And Donna is the one person, I think, who's the best specialist I've ever heard about, who talks about sociopaths through her website at lovefraud.com. So maybe you can tell our new listeners how you came about doing this kind of work.
Well, I became involved in this because I was married to a sociopath. My ex-husband took $250,000 from me. He cheated with at least 6 different women during our 2.5-year marriage. He had a child with one of those women, and then 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, which turned out to be the second time that he committed bigamy. And once I figured out what was going on, I still couldn't comprehend what this behavior was all about. And I had a therapist at the time who was helping me, and I was talking to her about, he did this, he did that, he did all this stuff, and it doesn't make any sense. And she said that he sounds like a sociopath. And I'm like, a sociopath? I mean, what is that? I like most of the world, thought it was a serial killer. Well, it turns out that a sociopath is a social predator. These people exploit other people, as the way that they live their lives. And having gone through this and being totally blindsided, I felt that it was information that needed to get out to the public. And so I started my website. It actually launched back in 2005. And since that time, I've collected 4,100 cases of people who've been involved with sociopaths. These people, they're everywhere, and they're in all demographic areas. They're men, they're women, they're rich and poor, old and young, all age groups, all races, all communities, and people really need to know that they're out there.
So let me ask you this question, Donna. If you were to evaluate the situation as a whole, like out of every 100 men, how many would, or let's talk about men for a moment, how many would you think are sociopaths?
Well, it depends how you define the word. And that's one of the reasons why there's so much confusion about this issue, because mental health professionals have not agreed upon the definition of what a sociopath is and how they should be diagnosed. And so actually the way that I'm using the word now is as a general term for anyone who is a social predator, who is an exploiter. Now, when you talk to clinicians, as you well know, they could be defined more precisely, I guess would be a better word, as psychopaths. And you know, and then there's antisocial personality disorder, and then there's borderline personality disorder and narcissistic personality disorder. And these all have a lot in common. I mean, you know, there's a few differences among them that you know, the academics and you know, people who have to testify in court need to be precise about. But for the average person, it doesn't matter. I mean, what these folks do is that they victimize others. So if you were to add up the numbers of people who've been officially diagnosed with either antisocial personality disorder, which encompasses psychopathy, they're almost synonymous but not quite the same. And if you add that to the people who have narcissism, and if you add that to the people who have borderline personality disorder, we're talking about 12% of the population. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's 37 million people in the United States are possibly sociopathic.
Uh-huh. And women, too.
Yes, and that includes women, too. Generally, if you look at the folks with antisocial personality disorder, they assume that it's like three men to every woman. If you look at borderline personality disorder, those are 75% women compared to 25% men. You know, so in the end, maybe it's half and half, I don't know. But, you know, 12% of the population is an awfully big number. And this is just the people who would be clinically diagnosed as having a personality disorder. Beyond that, there are people who have, like, partial disorders, you know, who have some of the traits and not all of them. And these people would probably not be clinically diagnosed as having the disorder, but you don't want to be with these people either because, you know, they're just simply not the type of they will not have the type of romantic relationship or involvement that you really deserve. So it's important to know that there are millions of these people out there, and they can be anywhere.
Donna, I had a note come in a few minutes ago from Janet in Missouri, and she wanted me to ask you, are all sociopaths narcissists?
All sociopaths are narcissists, but not all narcissists are sociopaths. And the degree of difference from what I've seen seems to be the amount of malice involved in their behavior. Like sociopaths, people with antisocial personality disorder will try to take advantage of somebody and torment somebody, sometimes just for the fun of it. And, you know, so they just really are brutal often in their behavior, whereas narcissists are so concerned about validating themselves that they can hurt other people and are just kind of clueless about it, you know, whereas a sociopath will do it intentionally. So that seems to be one of the big differences between someone with antisocial personality disorder and narcissism.
Would you say that sociopaths get pleasure out of hurting people?
Some of them do, yes. Some of them look at it as entertainment. I mean, I've heard from many people who were involved with sociopaths, especially in, like, online dating situations or even sometimes just regular dating situations, where the sociopath just leads somebody along until the person falls for them, and then they dump them. And the whole thing was just entertainment for these people. It's unbelievable how heartless they can often be.
Okay, I just had a note from Rochelle in Arizona. She wants to ask you, have men who are sociopaths changed through therapy?
The short answer is no. Once mm-hmm. a sociopath is an adult, there is really not much, if anything, that can be done with them. I mean, most therapists recognize that this disorder is pretty much permanent, you know, once somebody is an adult. And, you know, that's where a lot of people, especially women and sometimes men as well, that's where people get in trouble. I mean, you keep thinking that if somebody just goes for therapy, they get counseling, that, you know, they're going to turn around and show that they really care and you know, recognize the value of the relationship. And in all honesty, people are deluding themselves. You know, it simply is not going to happen if somebody has this condition.
Would you say that most sociopaths have controlling behavior? They're trying to control people?
Yep, that is precisely the core of this disorder. What sociopaths are interested in is power, control, and sex, and that's pretty much it. So, yes, the core of the disorder is that it's aggression. You know, in one form or another, they are looking to dominate people, and they're looking to be in power positions over people. That's all they want. I mean, the key of this disorder, of antisocial personality disorder, is that they have no ability to love. I mean, it's really kind of hard to grasp that and to get a handle on just how that different they are from everybody else. But a sociopath has no interest in love. They really, you know, don't feel that emotion, and the only thing that they're interested in is power and control.
But they do pretend very well, don't they?
Oh gosh,
the
yes. Oh, they're fabulous actors. But you, I mean, and that's what's so confusing is because, you know, when somebody says that they love you, of course you want to believe that, and you know, they're good at it. They are masters of what we call the grand gesture. You know, I mean, I remember this one case that I talked to. This woman had been with a guy and broke up with him, and they were adults, and so she's working in this big professional office building and had broken up with this guy. And he shows up at the office building, and there in the atrium with all these people walking around, he walks in with a dozen red roses and gets on his knees and proposes to her in the middle of the atrium. Now, I mean, you know, it's overwhelming, and they're very capable of doing that type of behavior. And, you know, because of that, a normal person will think, my goodness, this guy really loves me if he's going to do this in the middle of the atrium, you know, with all these people walking around. And it's all for show. You know, it's an act. And, you know, eventually that guy, all he wanted from her was her money. And you know, not that she was making a lot of money, but she ended up paying for everything. And in the meantime, he's, you know, with two other women at the same time. So it's all about putting on a performance with them.
Can you give me a little better description? Someone had just written me a note here, and I'm not quite sure about them. Maybe you can discuss the difference with a borderline personality disorder.
You know, it's very interesting because I was just writing about that today, and there will be an article in tomorrow morning's on lovefraud.com tomorrow morning. A borderline personality disorder technically is a clinical diagnosis that someone, it's a condition that's not psychotic and not anxiety or neurotic. I mean, that's the two main categories of psychological disorders is psychosis, which means essentially, you know, you're losing touch with reality, and neuroticism, which means that you're anxious and depressed and have those types of things. So they found this condition, you know, borderline, which is like in between. It's not one or the other. Now, it's very interesting about borderline personality disorder because most of the people who are diagnosed with it are women. In fact, 75% of those who are diagnosed with borderline personality disorder are female. However, some research has been done to indicate that perhaps quite a few of the women who are diagnosed with borderline personality disorder are actually sociopaths, and the therapists simply do not want to call a woman or give the woman the diagnosis of a sociopath. On the other hand, I was just reading a book, which actually is kind of an old book, by Dr. Donald Dutton, which is called The Batterer, A Psychological Profile, and it essentially talks about men who are wife assaulters. And he classifies three different types of wife assaulters, you know, one of which is psychopaths, another which he describes as controlling, and the third that he describes as cyclical. And these are the ones, the cyclical, are the classic batterers that we hear about, where there's a cycle of battery in that, you know, first there's this period where there's this kind of tension, and then it explodes, and then the man is all apologetic and loving and gentle and everything like that, and it just keeps, the cycle keeps repeating itself. Well, Dr. Dutton has done some research, and he believes that the men who are the cyclical batterers actually are suffering from borderline personality disorder. And I found this to be fascinating, you know, when I read this book, because it was really interesting that, you know, not all wife assaulters are psychopaths. I mean, a lot of them may have borderline personality disorder.
How do you distinguish that?
I'm sorry?
How do you distinguish between the two?
Psychopaths have no conscience, and their entire lives are about manipulating people, whereas borderline personality disorder, they do have a conscience, and that's one of the reasons why they look like they're exhibiting remorse after they've assaulted their spouses, well, their wives in the case of the men, is because they do feel remorse. The key to borderline personality disorder is that it's based with women on anxiety. And a lot of the women who are diagnosed with borderline personality disorder were sexually abused when they were young. And, you know, this is kind of a coping mechanism for them. And in the book that I just read, Dr. Dutton also talks about the men who have this disorder experience shaming when they were young. Or they, and they also experienced a mother who was unavailable to them, and they also experienced abuse in the home. So one of the debates in all of these personality disorders is how much of it is inherent, like genetic, and how much of it is through nurture. And generally now, as far as antisocial personality disorder and psychopathy are concerned, the experts tend to think that it's primarily genetic, but whether or not the disorder actually develops is due to the upbringing that the child would get. In other words, a kid could be born with a predisposition to be psychopathic or have antisocial personality disorder. It doesn't necessarily come to pass unless they get the type of parenting that will make it come to pass, which is usually the case because one of or both of their parents are usually psychopaths. Whereas in the case of borderline personality disorder, it's much more of the nurture side of the nature-nurture equation. It's much more because of the childhood experiences that causes this disorder to develop.
That's a really interesting concept. I want to tie that in with another concept that, you know, I learned about, you know, many years ago as far as the repetitiveness of abuse. That if someone, let's say, is abused as a child, that, you know, they're very likely to repeat this behavior, pattern of behavior, as they become an adult with their own children. And it's because it's like a learned behavior. Do you think that's possible, that this is the same thing as learned behavior from a parent?
Sometimes it is. And that's the argument that Dutton makes regarding the abusive men, you know, who are assaulting their wives. It's probably not totally the case with the psychopaths, you know, because there's such a inborn genetic component to psychopathy. I mean, it's not only that they get the genes. There, recent research has found that there are these structural differences in psychopathic brains. So, you know, there's a lot of biological components to psychopathy that allow that they don't just learn that behavior. And, you know, this is a really important concept because, you know, a lot of the folks involved in domestic violence, you know, assume that, you know, the people have learned this behavior either from their families or from the culture. And that's not necessarily true. And I actually find it to be very frustrating, you know, reading some books where, you know, they're obviously describing sociopathic behavior, but, you know, they're assuming that it's all just what their kids are mirroring, what they see. And in many cases, that's not the case at all.
How about when it comes to sexual abuse? How do you view that? Would that be what you would consider sociopath? Would that be more nurtured? Would that be more nature?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I can say in the book that I just read, when Dutton was describing this cyclical type of abuser, it rarely included sexual abuse. So the sexual abuse is probably more towards the, you know, the psychopaths and the sociopathic abusers.
No, I was really trying to put this in common terms, you know, as far as nature and nurture. I know that I grew up with a father who was really a sociopath, and I was very close to him because he was very charming, and they can be very lovable on outside appearances. And, you know, I always equated that my dad must love me because of the fact that, you know, he's so loving towards me. But, you know, he did some really bad things, like, you know, as far as his behavior with society, stealing things, setting fires. But that was the environment that I grew up with, and that was the norm, as, you know, growing up, that I thought these things just go on. And because I loved my dad, I thought, well, this must be okay. So I think that was more of like a nurturing kind of thing, learning to grow up in a certain environment. So do you think people who, do you think it's possible it can be just environment or no? Like learn behavior. This is what you see, so this is what you get.
Well, I think it depends on what someone would be diagnosed with. I rely a lot on the information developed by Dr. Leanne Leadham, who has, you know, written quite a few articles for Love Fraud. And she thinks that if someone becomes psychopathic or has antisocial personality disorder, and they're very close, it probably has at least some genetic component. However, there are other disorders, you know, like the borderline that I just described, that perhaps there isn't a genetic component, and it does stem mostly from childhood experiences. So, you know, I mean, all these disorders aren't the same, and the way they manifest in different people aren't the same, and, you know, it's a continuum, and some are bad, and some are not quite so bad. So I think there's room for every option. It's just a matter of what happens to a particular individual.
I think the bottom line is that no matter whether it's nature or nurture, it's unhealthy to have to live with it, right?
Oh, absolutely. In all honesty, the only rational solution when you know, there's a sociopathic person around is to not be around, is to put an end to the involvement. And, you know, that can be very difficult and very painful, especially if, you know, someone is your blood relative. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people who realize that one or more of their children are sociopathic, and it's horrible. You know, it's like, how do you cut it off, you know? But the thing with a sociopath is that they will continue to exploit forever. And, you know, they'll continue to take advantage of you as long as you allow it to. So the only way to put an end to your own problems, you know, that come from these situations is to get out of the situation. That's all that can be done.
I think when it comes to families, it's such a complicated mess. Maybe you agree with this. When you have a child who's a sociopath, I think a lot of times parents take on the responsibility or feeling some kind of guilt or trying even harder because something went wrong and they blame themselves. But that's not necessarily the case, right? Is that correct? You can still be a good parent and have a child who's not good.
Oh, yes, it certainly can happen, you know, and that's part of the genetic crapshoot. And, you know, I mean, maybe it came up somewhere along the family tree. You know, maybe a great uncle twice removed or something, you know, was a sociopath at some point, and you just never know. And I have certainly heard of cases like that. You know, I've heard of cases where two parents, you know, were provided a loving home and every advantage, and the kid turns out bad. So it's certainly possible that that can happen.
I think we see that if you go back to, well, I'm older than you, but when I was younger, and they would show us these old movies, and you'd have one child came out a gangster, one came out a priest, and they came from the same family. And you would wonder how one could go so wrong and one could go so right. But I think, like you say, it's a genetics crapshoot. You never quite know what you're getting when you marry someone in their genetics or what's in your past either. So I think that's very
right.
Likely that could happen.
It absolutely can.
I think parents a lot of times will enable their children feeling guilty and thinking that if they do something better or different that it will change, but it doesn't change, right?
It depends at what age. Now, there are ways that parents can work with kids when they're young, and especially when they're very young, that can definitely make a difference. For example, like it is possible in some cases to see the beginnings of sociopathic behavior in very young children. And what it tends to look like is they tend to be highly independent. They tend to be fearless. They tend to not have a great need to, like, be around their mothers. And you'll see this at, like, ages 3 and 4 or something like that. So what happens at that point is that what's missing for them is this desire for emotional and empathetic connections, you know, with anybody. And so essentially the parents need to spend a lot of time teaching their children to be empathetic and teaching them to appreciate love. Now, you can do this when they're young. Dr. Leanne Leadham writes about this in her book, which is called Just Like His Father. It's the only book out there that is designed for to help people parent when they realize that their children may have a genetic predisposition for sociopathy. So that's what has to be done. Now, the thing is, a lot, especially sociopathy, this disorder really kicks in with puberty. And, you know, at that point, once the testosterone gets going, it gets much more difficult to send someone in a different direction. And then, you know, by the time a person, you know, is grown up and is an adult, there's not a whole lot that can be done.
One of our listeners just sent me this link to ask you if you've heard of this book called Stop Walking on Eggshells, Taking Your Life Back When Someone You Care About Has Borderline Personality Disorder.
I have heard of the book, but I haven't read it, so I really don't know anything about it.
It was really helpful for her in getting to understand the situation.
Okay,
but
good.
Of this book, I haven't heard of it before. But the other thing I wanted to ask you is, as you were mentioning earlier, that sometimes you can catch this behavior when children are younger. But do you think that bullying could have a direct effect on this, either being bullied or just bullying people? I mean, is that a sign when you see somebody who's a bully when they're kids, of a sociopath?
You know, it's very interesting, you know, because I just finished reading this book called Bullying Under Attack. And it was sent to me in the mail by a publishing company. You know, we handle some of their books, so they sent me this. And it was actually written by teenagers. So there were a lot of teenagers talking about their experiences of being bullied, and some stories were also by kids who said that they were bullies. And it really gave me a new perspective on what could be going on in these cases, because quite a few of the kids talked about the fact that they felt inferior, so, and they wanted to be accepted among their peers, and that was the reason that they started picking on other kids, was so that other kids would look up to them. And, you know, there were quite a few of the kids who expressed remorse about that. But then, towards the end of the book, there's this one, I guess it was a guy who wrote this story about how, you know, that he had been a bully and he had been diagnosed with ADHD, and he blamed his disorder, the ADHD, used that to justify or blame why he hit a kid with a shovel. Okay,
and I'm
thinking, I don't think so, you know, not in this particular case, you know, because ADHD, alcoholism, and sociopathy are all genetically related. In other words, if you have the genes for one, you may very well get the others. So you got this kid who's diagnosed with ADHD, and his bullying extends to hitting one kid with a shovel and then lashing another kid with a belt. And so I'm kind of thinking, well, I think this one is probably more of a sociopath than someone who just has self-esteem issues. And and the fact that he's, like, blaming it on his ADHD, well, that's typical sociopathic behavior also, is blaming something or somebody else for their own behavior. So I guess the answer is, you know, some of the kids maybe are sociopathic, but perhaps some of them aren't sociopathic and have the capacity to outgrow this behavior. And hopefully, you know, with a lot of the programs that are going on in schools, you know, maybe it's getting turned around.
I have another note here from my friend Grace in Texas. She wanted to ask you, if all narcissists and sociopaths have a sense of entitlement?
Yes, they do. I mean, especially, yes, sociopaths and narcissists, they believe that the world revolves around them. I mean, this is certainly one of the prime characteristics of this disorder, is that sociopaths especially see themselves as the center of the universe, and that's how they expect to be treated. And narcissists essentially build their whole characters on getting validation from others. So, yes, they certainly do definitely pursue entitlement.
Do you think that sociopaths start to believe that they're above the law, that there's a certain set of values that are different for them than there are for other people?
Oh, absolutely. The rules do not apply to sociopaths. They think that they are entitled to do absolutely anything that they want. They're entitled to do and get what they want, when they want it, how they want it, and by whom. So, yes, many, many sociopaths do not believe that the laws apply to them.
Mm-hmm. So now that we're talking about, you know, this kind of a personality, and many of our women have husbands who are either sociopaths or narcissists or have borderline personalities or passive-aggressive, many of their ex-husbands or husbands fall into this category. My concept was that the reason that their husbands in many cases have become like this is because living a lie can make you like this. If every day you have to lie about your life and pretend that, you know, it's not true, then after a while, you know, you have to protect yourself by lying on a constant basis, and you start to believe your own lies. I mean, I see this pattern happening with a lot of the men that our women marry. Would you say that's a possibility, if you just keep living a lie, then eventually that lie becomes your reality?
I imagine so. I mean, my ex-husband, for 20 years, told people that he was in the military. And he never was, but he had everybody convinced. I mean, while he was here, he was originally from Australia, and I'm from New Jersey. But you know, I met him here. I didn't have this long distance relationship in Australia. But while he was here, I mean, he was a member of the Vietnam Veterans Organization. He marched in Veterans Day parades. He was the keynote speaker. I went with him twice as he talked to school kids about what it was like to be in the military. The man was never in the military. But I think he knew he was lying. I mean, the man was not delusional. He knew that the whole thing was fabricated, but he had been telling these same stories for so long that, you know, they were just second nature to him. Now, as far as men, you know, who are gay and living that life, I don't know. I mean, I think it could be a possibility. But what I've noticed is that a lot of men who behave in the way that you're talking about, that, you know, pretend to be straight and end up, marrying people, they tend to be, a lot of them are sociopaths. I mean, there are those who were confused and, you know, confused about their sexuality, or those who, know that it's not accepted in many areas of society in order to be gay, so they're trying to be straight. But there's a certain percentage, and I don't know what the percentage is. These people are just sociopaths, and they're using sex as just another tool to manipulate others for whatever reason. And, you know, I did some research a year ago, which I presented in May to the Society for the Scientific Study of Psychopathy, about sexual deception, because I did research for my last book, which is called Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. And one of the questions that I asked in this research, it was an internet survey that I had like 1,300 responses to. One of the questions I asked was, did the person lie about their sexuality? In other words, did the person, claim to be straight when they were really gay, or did the person claim to be gay when they were straight, or whatever? And what I found was that about, I think it was 18% of my sample people said that the person lied about their sexuality. And those who lied about their sexuality were far more manipulative and far more destructive to their partners than those who did not lie about their sexuality. And now, all these people were sociopaths, okay? Everybody in the survey was describing a sociopath. But some sociopaths were honest about their sexuality, and some sociopaths lied about their sexuality. And those who lied were by and far the most destructive and the worst than all the other ones. And, I mean, they're worse than the other sociopaths. That's how bad it was.
Uh-huh. Was there any, do you have any ideas why that is?
I think, and this would just be speculation because I don't have any idea, there's no research on it. These people are just willing to do absolutely anything to manipulate others to get what they want. And they look at sexuality just as another tool in the arsenal, just something else that they can do in order to manipulate people to give them what they want, because they know that if they can hook somebody sexually, that means their chances of getting whatever else they're looking for are better, if they've got somebody sexually hooked.
I think in a lot of cases with the men that we're talking about here, it's a matter that they're trying to control the environment around them and protect themselves from getting caught. So a lot of times the behavior they use is kind of bizarre in the sense they isolate, I think this is typical of a lot of sociopaths, so they isolate their wives and their women they're with from their families, from their friends. They make it so unpleasant that nobody wants to come around anymore, making you feel even more isolated. I see this happening repeatedly for men who want to protect themselves because they don't want people finding out their secret. And psychologically, they're always in fear that you're going to let this information be known. So instead, you just kind of try to remove the woman from having contact with anybody.
Well, in all honesty, what you're describing is typical abusive behavior. I mean, that's exactly the same behavior that the assault of men engage in. I mean, I don't know how many of the women that you talk to were actually experienced domestic violence, but that isolating the woman
not
is...
Not a large percentage. I mean, a small percentage. It's more emotional battering.
Okay. Well, in any event, then, what you're describing is abusive behavior. And that's exactly what all the batterers do. It's exactly what all the coercive controlling men do. The key is taking away the woman's support system and then gradually wearing her down psychologically. And, I don't think, personally, that probably doesn't have anything to do with being gay. I think it has to do with the fact that they probably have a personality disorder.
Yes, they do have a personality disorder, and I'm not quite sure if it's because when you live a lie day in and day out, you develop that personality disorder, or you happen to start with, or a combination of both. I just think that when you have to live a lie and always protecting yourself and always having to make up stories and cover your lies and cover your tracks, you know, it's a very exhausting job, and you start losing track. And by isolating the person you're with, you know, it makes it less exhausting because you don't have to worry quite as much. I mean, I just feel that...
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. But, I mean, the objective here is power and control. And that's how they engage in power and control over the woman, is by isolating her, taking away her support system so that the woman becomes more and more dependent on the man, and also the woman doesn't have the resources to get out when she's had enough.
One listener just called in. She says, does Donna think that all men who lie about their sexuality are sociopaths?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
I would say probably. You know, because if someone is going to lie about their identity, I mean, this is really bad. And, I mean, this isn't a little lie, like, you know, about, like, the big fish that I caught, you know? It's like, I mean, if this is pretty basic, you know, whether or not you are, whether or not you're gay or straight, that's pretty basic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand the confusion in the beginning for some men, trust me. Some men really are confused.
Yes.
Sexuality is confusing. But once you're married and you start acting on that other sexuality, you're not confused anymore. You're doing it.
Right.
And this is where the problems begin, because men start, you know, lying and hiding it. We have about 20% of our women in our network who have sexually transmitted diseases from their, you know, husbands, ex-husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Who will still sit there in front of your face and tell you, you didn't get that from me.
Mm-hmm.
You must have had that before we got married. Or you must have been cheating on me. I mean, they'll do anything but accept responsibility. So even when they caught her, they still find a way out of it.
Then that group of people is most likely sociopathic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there certainly are men, gay men, who were confused about their sexuality or not ready to come out. In fact, I have two gay neighbors across the street, and, you know, that was the case with one of the men. I mean, he was married. He has kids. He's got grandkids. But, you know, eventually he decided that that's not who he was, and he's fine. He's wonderful. I know that he has a relationship with his children and grandchildren because they come and visit. So, you know, he's just one of the guys that, you know, took a while to sort out where he was. But the other ones who are intentionally deceiving people and intentionally hurting people and simply don't care about, I mean, the way I look at it, as far as many sociopaths are concerned, you know, they're neither straight nor gay. You know, they'll just do whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm. So, the most important lesson I think that women need to learn from this is that there is a prototype that a man who's a sociopath will look for, and just because you're not married to a gay man anymore, worrying about finding another gay man shouldn't be your primary concern. Worrying about finding a predator should be your primary concern. And I always tell this to our women, that when you come out of a bad marriage, you have to go through a recovery road before you jump into the next relationship, or you're doomed to repeat it in a different form. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the things that we talk about a lot on Love Fraud. All sociopaths hook us by finding out what our vulnerability is. And we all have vulnerabilities. I mean, we're human, we all have vulnerabilities. But what happens is that some of us have more vulnerability than others, which leaves us targets, essentially, because a sociopath will be able to figure out what it is that makes you vulnerable and put their hooks into that deepest space within you. So once you realize that you've been involved with someone who is a predator or who you know, took advantage of you or exploited you, a couple of things have to happen. First of all, you have to recover from that experience with this particular individual. Perhaps it was your most recent husband who turned out to be gay or a sociopath you were involved with. You need to recover from that experience. But you also need to look back and see what experiences you had before that made you vulnerable. And you need to recover from them as well. I mean, I talk to an awful lot of people who, when they start telling me their stories, I just see this whole chain of events where, you know, they were involved with one guy who turned out to be a sociopath, and before that they had an abusive relationship, and before that they had another abusive relationship, and before that, you know, their parents, you know, were abusive or at least made them feel like they were unworthy. So you have to, in order to fully recover, look at all those situations and recover from all the different vulnerabilities. And the better you can do that, the better you're going to be able to move forward and find a satisfying involvement.
I think about so many women feel that they can change a man. You know, they're going to get a broken man, but they can fix them. I think this is part of our nature for some of us. You know, maybe you just feel that responsibility as women in general, or as the case of the women who are involved, you know, in our cycles with, you know, with gay men. And the overwhelming majority, I would say about 80 to 83%, are in the helping field. They're either nurses, there's teachers, lawyers, you know, they're helpers. And I think that being a helper makes you vulnerable for, you know, this type of man. Do you agree with that or no?
Oh, it's absolutely true. In fact, you know, even Dr. Robert Hare, who wrote Without Conscience, which is like the preeminent description of psychopaths, I mean, he points that out, that psychopaths tend to target women who have nurturing-type personalities, and that folks who are teachers, nurses, doctors, a lot of therapists, you know, these are natural targets, exactly for the reason that you described. And you know, this is something that really gets to the point of how to find a healthy relationship, because a good relationship is an involvement with a partner who can be supportive so that you can both support each other. You know, it's not good to be in an involvement where, you know, one person is holding up the other person, because it's not an equal partnership, and you have to ask yourself, well, what am I getting out of this relationship? I mean, you know, what is the support for me? In fact, you know, I just talked to somebody yesterday who was, you know, in this long-term relationship with a guy who, you know, by the time we were talking, obviously sounded sociopathic to me, and, you know, she was all worried about, I mean, the guy is, like, treating her badly, and she's worried about breaking it off because she's thinking, well, you know, and what does that say about me if I told this man that I love him and now I'm willing to break it off? You know, so we get all twisted up inside, you know, with these concepts. But the important thing is that if you realize that you're involved with a person who is abusive, then the chances that you're going to be able to fix this person are like next to zero. And, you know, at some point we have to put ourselves first. You know, at some point we have to say, I'm going to do what's good for me in my life. I'm going to, you know, take charge of my own healing and do the personal work that I need to do so that I can enjoy myself and I can find the type of relationship and the type of involvement that I deserve. And that should be everybody's goal. You know, I mean, the key to finding a good relationship is self-healing. The key is to be strong within yourself, you know, happy within yourself, loving of yourself, and, you know, if you can get to that point where you're basically, you know, a happy, self-satisfied person, then the right relationship is just going to come along.
And that's true. And the other thing, point that I make to women is that it doesn't happen overnight. And even if you think 3 months into it or 6 months into it and you're fine, you're not fine. Because you have to really experience explore who you were before you even got involved in this relationship, because so many of our women change. And I think when you're living your life just to please a man who could never be pleased, you become someone you don't even know anymore.
Yes.
I know that certainly happened with me. I went in as a strong woman, and I came out as a very weak woman and lost myself along the way and lost that strength along the way, just trying to please someone who was never pleased with me, never knowing why. So I tell women that, first, you know, a lot of our women really came from abusive situations before they got married. So they were like escaping from one place into another place. Either they had a bad home life, a bad family life, low self-esteem, you know, all the reasons, the wrong reasons for getting involved. But sometimes women never even love themselves to start with. You know, I tell women you should go refine yourself, find the person you were before this marriage, but in many cases they just didn't even have that self-esteem to start with. So then it just even gets battered down further. So they have to really learn to love themselves first. Because they'll never find a healthy relationship, but they have to depend on someone else for happiness, right?
That's absolutely right. I mean, that's absolutely the crucial lesson. I mean, you know, I actually talk to people about the silver lining of these sociopathic relationships. And the silver lining is that because they are so bad that you can't sweep it under the rug. I mean, you have to deal with the fact that this person was exploiting you. It makes you look at how you got into it and what you need to do in order to heal and recover. And that's actually like the pot of gold at the end, because these are so bad that you can't ignore it. You're forced to work on yourself. I mean, if you want to recover, unless you want to stay in the black hole forever, that's a different thing. But if you have come to the point where you said, I'm not going to put up with this anymore, this is not what I want in my life, you know, these relationships are so painful that the pain is a motivator. And it makes you want to do the work because you simply do not want to live this way anymore. So it often does become a motivation to finally, you know, look at all your issues and deal with the pain of your past, whether it be from a prior relationship or your family of origin or whatever, and, you know, look at all those situations and decide that, you know, I'm going to do the work that I need to do in order to recover because I want a better life for me. And, you know, sometimes these relationships are, you know, give you the motivation that you need in order to make those big changes.
Donna, are there any clues that you can give our women about what to look for when they start going out and meeting somebody else again, you know, in order to avoid making this mistake?
Yes.
So some of these charming, you know, and they're very personable. And is there any way to really check this out first?
Yes. There's three things. You know, the first thing is to know that these predators exist. I mean, whether we're talking about a sociopath or a borderline or, you know, whatever it is, there are people in the world who live their lives by exploiting others, and we need to understand that they're out there. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to understand the warning signs. Now, we talked about them in previous shows, and if anybody's interested, they can go to my website, lovefraud.com, or get my book, which is called Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. And I lay out the 10 signs that you're going to see early in a relationship. One of the ones, of course, is charisma and charm. And so, but, you know, there's a bunch of them, and if you learn the warning signs, you'll start to see them. But the third and most important thing is that we need to pay attention to our instincts. Generally, our instincts will tell us that somebody is bad for us. Because I talk to people all the time, and you know, this is one of the questions that I also asked in my internet survey. I asked all the participants, 1,300 people, was there any time early in the relationship that you had a gut feeling or an intuition or an instinct that something was either wrong with this person or wrong with the relationship? 72% said yes. Okay? So 72%, almost three-quarters, had some kind of internal warning that there was a problem with this relationship. But we talk ourselves out of it. We talk ourselves into thinking that, you know, I can help this person, I can save this person, or, you know, for whatever reason, you know, we get these internal warnings and we don't pay attention to them. So the number one thing that someone can do is to learn to listen to their intuition. Now, the other thing that you brought up is that recovery takes time, you know, especially if you've been in a situation where, you know, you have this bad recent relationship, and then you look back and you see all these other issues that made you vulnerable, perhaps to the time that you were very young. So it could take several years, in all honesty, to really start to unravel a lot of this stuff. And the more work you do towards unraveling it, the more clearly you're going to be able to hear your intuition. So that's another reason why it's so important to do this work. I mean, not only to help you find a relationship, but for anything, you know, because we do get these internal warning signs. You know, we could get these internal warning signs when, you know, we better not do business with somebody, where the, you know, the guy's or the person is a scam artist. You know, it doesn't have to be a romantic relationship. The instincts will still work, but we need to learn how to pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the whole thing. If something doesn't seem right, and I think that you need to get a feel for a person, because usually these people, like you said, they're loners. They don't have a lot of friends because they don't know how to be a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell women, I have this one book out called Man Readers, A Woman's Guide to Dysfunctional Men. And I have a list of things that women can do to check out men. But, you know, you have to be your own detective, but you have to be open and honest about it. You can't make excuses for it. But you really have to find the family of these people and find, you know, friends and really talk to them and get a feel, because usually I find these guys are very isolated. Like, they'll say, oh, well, my family's not living in this part of the state, or, you know, I just moved here. I mean, I know that's not a definite, but it's definitely a red flag. And I think that's what you have to look for. If something doesn't seem right, if it doesn't add up, then there's chances that there's problems there. I mean, the man you were married to was really way above and beyond any kind of despicability that any of us have ever even heard of. How did you find him, Donna?
Oh, God bless the Internet, you know. and in all honesty, though, I mentioned
really
that...
Bad.
Yes, he was bad, but as I said, I've collected 4,000 cases, and one of the things that I've come away with after talking to so many people and communicating with so many people was that I got off easy. I mean, compared to what other people have gone through, I mean, this guy took money from me, you know, and that was pretty much it. You know, he didn't crush me the way a lot of other women and sometimes men end up getting crushed. So,
they won't,
you know,
let go. Well,
yeah.
You know, walk and say goodbye. They have to torture you.
Right. And that I did not have that experience. You know, the guy I was with, he just disappeared. Thank goodness. Because, I mean, those who are still in their clutches, I mean, they're the ones that really have it bad.
Mm-hmm. So all I can say is Donna has a wealth of information at lovefraud.com. Some of you have told me how helpful it's been to you, and her books have been so helpful to you. And if you go on her website at lovefraud.com, you can order the books from there. You can sign up for the newsletters. I mean, Donna is out there really helping women to understand what they're up against. And her warnings are wonderful. Her literature is wonderful. Her newsletters are wonderful. And following her advice will never lead you wrong. It's only going to put you on the right track. So, Donna, I really appreciate you taking the time to come visit us again. And you know, sadly, I'm going to have to impose that a couple times a year with you, because it's just so important to hear this. But, you know, I'm
okay.
Guilty.
All right. Well,
you know,
Bonnie, thank you so much.
I've learned how to do that from all these sociopathic men. But, yeah, I really appreciate your coming here, and we'll look forward to having you back in the summertime. And once again, lovefraud.com. Go there. You'll love it. All right, thanks, Donna, and thanks to all our listeners. And we'll be back again here next week with you. Donna, have a wonderful week.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.